Wednesday, May 12th, 2021. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. And we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope your week is going well. Hope it's off to a good start. Hope you and your family and friends are all staying healthy, doing well in this spring time of the year. We are happy to have you here with us today. And you know, I'm going to be real honest with you today. It's actually been a rough few weeks here at The Dose. I don't usually talk about anything too personal here on the podcast. I might share something here or there, but I don't do too much of that here on the show. But I've not been feeling all that great going back about a month or so. And no, it isn't COVID or any COVID vaccine related things. No, I have had a different affliction that I've been dealing with now for about a month. And by a month, I mean much, much longer, because I've actually been fighting kidney stones. Now, before you start saying things like, oh, Clint, you're getting old, and the next step for you is like Depends undergarments, understand this. I have had kidney stones since I was a kid. In fact, I got my first kidney stone sitting in class in high school. I've had surgery for them multiple times. We think we've figured out why I get them, and we're hoping that I won't get any more. But let me clear up a few, let's say, misconceptions about kidney stones. A lot of people hear that term, and they don't know exactly what that is. They think it has something like to do with your, I don't know, genitals or something.
What is that anyway?
It's a stony mineral concretion formed abnormally in the kidney. And this jagged shard of calcium pushes its way through the ureter into the bladder. It's forced out through the urine.
I will tell you, a kidney stone is this intense stabbing pain in your lower back, and it kind of goes forward into your stomach. See, there's this very narrow tube that runs from your kidney to your bladder, and this stone, which, by the way, kind of looks like a medieval mace. It's like a ball with like spikes all over it. Well, it pushes through that tube and it causes intense pain. It causes bleeding. It causes fever. It causes vomiting. It's a whole thing. Anyways, I've been fighting a kidney stone for the past month or so, and there's not a whole lot you can really do for it. You take a ton of pain relievers. You chug as much water as you can. You try to walk or stay active. One, to help move the stone, kind of bounce it down through that tube. And two, to get the water to process its way out of your stomach. Well, you will be happy to know that the kidney stone has now passed. And I am feeling good again.
Woohoo!
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate that. You know, they always tell you that when you have a kidney stone and you actually pass it and you collect it, they make you strain it and all this stuff and you get it. Then they turn it in and see what it's made of. They always tell you, you should name your kidney stones once you pass them for someone that you don't really like. Well, I've got good news today on The Dose, kids. Little LeBron is in a better place. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us, I don't know, if you've ever suffered a kidney stone yourself or gallstones or whatever kind of stones you've had. By the way, I know a lot of people get like a kidney stone and they say, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. What are they talking about? I totally would wish that on my worst enemy. Anyway, feel free to hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at dailydosports. Doesn't have to be kidney stone related. Maybe you're bored. Maybe you want to talk sports. Maybe you've got a question about the upcoming NFL season. We've got some answers for you. Feel free to reach out. In fact, I heard from a couple people just this past week. One person had an NFL question. A couple people had Major League Baseball questions. Feel free to send those in. We'll always get you an answer. We just might end up using what you send on the show. Also, as long as you're still doing online shopping, which we all are, feel free to stop by tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear. We've got t-shirts, we've got hoodies, we've got sweatshirts. You can pick whatever color you want. Make sure you stop by tpublic.com and get some Daily Dose gear. Always nice to wear some Daily Dose gear when you head out in public, so make sure you stop by and get yours. Hey, today on the show, the NFL draft is over. We have nothing coming in the NFL until like rookie camps and mini camps, and if the players even allow it, training camp. But that doesn't mean that we don't have some questions for the NFL. Today, we are going to be plowing through every team in the league and look at one pressing question that we have for each team going into this next season. So we've got a lot to get to today on The Dose, because that's a lot of teams to cover. But first, there are a few things coming out in the world of sports that I want to touch on. And let's start off in college basketball. Look, I know that the NCAA screws up most everything that they touch, but I'm actually going to give them a little bit of credit today on the dose, because the NCAA Men's Basketball Rules Committee has proposed a rule that would assess a technical foul to players who fake being fouled. Are they calling that like the LeBron James rule? Not sure. It would be a Class B technical foul, so the opposing team would get one free throw attempt, and the player would not actually be assessed a personal foul. Under the current rules, a player is warned after flopping for the first time in a game. According to the release from the NCAA, if the rule is approved by the NCAA Playing Rules Oversight Panel coming up on June 3rd, players could get hit with a technical foul for things like falling to the court despite not being contacted after field goal attempts, or dribblers who bob their head to simulate being contacted, and players who act like they were the recipient of contact despite the fact they were never touched. According to Tad Boyle, who is the committee chair and head coach at the University of Colorado, he says, after 2 years of using warnings, we didn't feel like we were getting the results that we wanted. We're trying to get flopping out of our game. We're asking the officials to call them when they happen. And like I said, I give the NCAA a ton of credit for this. The NBA should take a lesson from the NCAA here. Because here's the thing. I know that we kind of just act like, oh, flopping, it's just kind of gamesmanship. No, it's cheating. It's blatantly cheating. And it's blatantly trying to manipulate the officials who are doing their best to rule this game. But this will never happen in the NBA. They should put it in, but the players' union would never allow it to happen. They would say it takes away the players' rights as, I don't know, interpretive actors or something, which is what they are becoming more and more every day. Less basketball players and more actors. But I'm telling you, I think fans would love it. If you go up, you don't get touched, and you fall to the ground, and they were just like, hey, that's technical. We're not putting up with that nonsense. You would get rid of so much of this nonsense. The NBA won't do it, but they should take a look at this rule, and they should institute it. The NBA needs this rule. Finally, we are going to talk a little horse racing today. I know, kind of shocking. We don't do that very often, but apparently, Medina Spirit's victory in the Kentucky Derby is in serious jeopardy because of a positive post-race drug test, one that prompted Churchill Downs to suspend Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert immediately over the weekend in the latest scandal to plague the sport. We've seen a lot of this stuff happening in horse racing lately. Now, if you don't know who Bob Baffert is, you know when they have these big races, the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, whatever, and you see the guy with all the white hair and his horse always wins? That's the guy. Well, Baffert has denied all wrongdoing and promised to be fully transparent with the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission during their investigation, but Baffert's barn received word over the weekend that Medina Spirit had tested positive for an excessive amount of the steroid betamethasone, which is sometimes used to treat pain and inflammation in horses, but they say the levels of that drug in the horse were much too high. Medina Spirit's win over Mandaloon in the Derby is going to stand for now, they say. The track said that failure to comply with the rules and medication protocols jeopardizes the safety of horses and jockeys, the sport's integrity, and the Derby's reputation. Now, get this. Medina Spirit is Baffert's fifth horse known to have failed a drug test in just over a year. Can we all stop pretending that Baffert is just better than everyone else? Well, I mean, I guess he is better at one thing. He's better at getting away with cheating. But here's one thing I want you to watch. I'm going to bet that this victory at the Derby will not be overturned at all. Oh, they might give him a little slap on the wrist, and they're going to say, we're going to monitor you more closely, and we're going to test your horses immediately after every race, and all this kind of stuff. They'll give him some slap on the wrist. But you know why this won't be overturned? Because of sports betting. Because bets have already been paid. There's no do-overs on those bets. You think the people that already won money are going to bring the money back? Yeah, me neither. So this win will stand. But make no mistake, Baffert is clearly cheating. His horses keep coming up with drugs in their system. But sports betting is going to have to figure out some protocols for weird situations like this, because it's obvious this horse had things in their system they shouldn't have had. So they shouldn't win. And yet I will bet there's not going to be a disqualification. This horse will still be named the Kentucky Derby winner because they can't do it over and give everybody money back and get the money back from bettors that won. For that reason, Medina Spirit's win is going to stand, like it or not. Now, of course, they are saying Medina Spirit would be disqualified from that win at the Derby if a second round of testing shows the presence of that same drug. Derby runner-up Mandaloon would then be elevated to the winner. But it's also completely unknown how long Derby officials will take to determine whether the results of the Derby will stand or whether they will change. Meanwhile, get this, Preakness officials on Tuesday already said they will allow Medina Spirit to enter their race this coming Saturday, but of course the horse will be subject to additional testing and monitoring following the colt's failed drug test at the Derby. Yeah, we kinda know how this is all gonna go, don't we? One last thing in sports news this week, moving over to the NFL in a little bit of a related story. The Daily Dose I-Team has informed us that both Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski have now made inquiries to Bob Baffert asking if he would be interested in training them at all in the offseason too, saying that Bob Baffert seems to have the commitment to excellence and the craftiness that they are both interested in, whatever that might mean. Okay, coming back, the NFL draft is now complete, and we have, well, right around 2.5 months until rookie camp begins, and then we'll have quarterbacks show up, and then we'll have veterans reporting for training camp, if the NFL Players Association allows that stuff to happen. But before we get to the 2021 NFL season, we actually have a lot of questions for NFL teams. When we come back, we are going to begin flying through every single team in the league with the biggest questions that we have for each one of them. So right now, we have a long, dry stretch of time before the NFL gets rolling again. The NFL draft completed a little over a week ago. And now free agency is mostly over. The draft is over. The NFL schedule will actually be released tonight. But we are starting to look around at the NFL landscape, and now we kind of know who is where and who is going to have who on their roster. And now that we know those things, well, we have a number of questions for teams out there. So right now, we are going to begin a very fast barnstorming tour of every single team in the NFL, and we're going to give you the biggest question that we have for them. Are you ready? Here we go. We are going to go through all 32 teams of the NFL right now. And let's start off in the AFC East, where the Buffalo Bills became the first team other than the New England Patriots to actually win this division going back to 2008. But here is the biggest question facing the Buffalo Bills this year. Were the Buffalo Bills just a one-hit wonder? Can quarterback Josh Allen do it again? We have seen him look so good and so athletic and so poised, and we've also seen him look like a moron, try to do too much, force balls that he shouldn't force, and get himself in trouble. Hey, we know NFL defensive coordinators, they get paid to take away what you like to do. And I guarantee this offseason, guys like Bill Belichick, guys like Brian Flores, they have been spending some quality time trying to see what can we take away from Josh Allen. Can we get him to revert back to that moron that we saw his first year? So the thing we all want to see, are the Bills going to regress a little bit this year? There's no question. They've got talent. They should be a contender in the AFC if they can stay at that level. And we're going to have to see if they can. Next up are the Miami Dolphins, who are really starting to build their team. And they are fully stocked with future draft picks too. The Dolphins went 10-6 last season. They just missed the playoffs. But they added some good talent via the draft with players like Jaylen Waddle and Jalen Phillips. But I think the question that we all have for the Miami Dolphins is this. Is Tua Tagovailoa really a bona fide NFL quarterback? Remember, veteran Ryan Fitzpatrick is gone. He is not in Miami anymore. Last season, Tua ranked 26th in quarterback rating in the NFL. Behind, I might add, guys like Andy Dalton and Gardner Minshew. Hey, if Tua is going to be the man, and Miami is really going to progress and move forward, that has to get better. If it does, the Dolphins are going to contend for the playoffs. If not, they're going to have to use that future draft stock they have to find the next guy, because apparently they won't have found him yet. The Miami Dolphins need to know if Tua is the man. We move next to the New England Patriots, who found themselves in a really unfamiliar position last year. They missed the playoffs completely in 2020. But in the offseason, the Patriots went out and they spent a ton of money in free agency. They grabbed linebacker Kyle Van Noy, tight end Hunter Henry, and wide receiver Nelson Aguilar. Head coach Bill Belichick is going to be on the revenge tour in 2021. But here is my question for the New England Patriots. Who is the opening day starter at quarterback for the Patriots? Cam Newton, he doesn't seem to be physically capable of truly being an NFL starter anymore. He just can't do it. He can't throw the ball more than 12 or 15 yards downfield. But can rookie Mac Jones prove that he's truly up to the task of actually taking over? I know that when Mac Jones fell to the Patriots, Patriot fans all over rejoiced. That's the perfect guy for our system. He's going to be the next Tom Brady. Yeah, that's not crazy high expectations at all. What if Mac Jones comes out and looks terrible? What if he's not the guy? Then what? You have to go back to Cam Newton and put his old cripple behind back in there? That is not going to go well. I want to see who the starter at quarterback is for the Patriots on day one. It's going to be very interesting to find out. Our final team in the AFC East is a team that is always kind of, well, hot garbage. But the New York Jets, they're starting to make some really smart moves. I mean, they went out and they hired head coach Robert Saleh. That was a pretty good move. Might not have been the choice the Jets would have usually made, but this is a guy that seems to get his players to play really hard. Then they made some really solid pickups in free agency. They went and strengthened both sides of the ball. And then in the draft, they get BYU quarterback Zach Wilson. They get offensive lineman Elijah Vera Tucker, and they get speedy wide receiver Elijah Moore. So here is my question for the New York Jets. What if Zach Wilson struggles early? Because he probably will. This is going to be a huge jump for Zach Wilson. He's coming from BYU, facing the competition that they faced, where I might add, the best team they faced this last year was who? Coastal Carolina? You're going to take that into the AFC East. That's going to be tough. And if he struggles, then what do the Jets do? Keep this in mind. Right now, the current backup quarterbacks on that Jets roster are named James Morgan.
Who?
And Mike White.
Who?
If Zach Wilson does what most young quarterbacks do and struggles a little bit, there aren't a whole lot of backup options. It is going to be Zach Wilson or bust unless they go sign a free agent, because they don't have much behind him at all. We move over to the NFC East, where the Washington football team made it to the playoffs last year. Well, basically by default, they had a 7-9 record. But quarterback Alex Smith is gone. But keep in mind, this team does have a really good defense. And then they went out and they grabbed veteran quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick. Well, can Fitzmagic now take Washington back to the playoffs is the question I have for them. Here's the thing. We know who Ryan Fitzpatrick is. He is great 1 week. He will come out and throw 4 or 5 touchdowns 1 week. He is horrible for the next 3 or 4 weeks. Here is something really crazy to think about, though. Right now in the NFC East, who's the best quarterback? It might be Ryan Fitzpatrick. We're going to talk about one other contender, but there aren't a whole lot of choices in that division. Having said that, like I said, he is so hit or miss, it's hard to know what to expect from Ryan Fitzpatrick. Can he be the guy to take Washington to the playoffs, maybe win a game or two? Because the rest of this team has some talent. You're just going to need to get steady intelligent play from Fitzpatrick. Not sure if he's capable of that, but we're going to find out. Next up, we have the New York Giants, who were somehow in the hunt for a playoff spot last year, mostly because this division was so terrible. The Giants went 6-10, but a lot of things really did go wrong for the Giants in 2020. Running back Saquon Barkley, he played just two games and then blew out his knee. Quarterback Daniel Jones completely regressed from his rookie season. He had a really below average season. The Giants did grab a couple of new wide receivers in free agency. They picked up Kenny Golladay and John Ross. So here's my question for the Giants. Can this offensive line keep their skill position players healthy? Can you keep Daniel Jones on the field? Can you keep Saquon Barkley and the newly drafted Kadarius Toney healthy? Because they didn't really address it. But the offensive line for the Giants is terrible. Remember this. The Giants allowed quarterback Daniel Jones to be sacked 45 times last year. Think about if you got sacked 45 times, how many times did you get hit? 145 times? That had better improve, not just for Jones, but also for Barkley, also for Toney, or the Giants are going to be in big, big trouble yet again. The Dallas Cowboys are next, and they had a rough 2020 season. Starting quarterback Dak Prescott had his ankle crushed for him last year. The Dallas defense was pretty much non-existent all year. They allowed 30 points per game last season. The Cowboys went 6-10, and we all know that is well below the expectations that take place every single year down in Big D. But here's the question I have for the Cowboys. Dak Prescott is now back. But is Dak Prescott going to be the same? Because I know the Cowboys have tried to address their defense, but it's not going to be fixed right away. So the Cowboys are going to need to score a lot of points. If they don't score a lot of points, they're going to be in trouble. Because this defense, maybe they take it down to 27, 26 points allowed. So the offense is going to have to score 28 to 30 every single game. And if Dak isn't Dak, if that ankle isn't healed, and more importantly than being healed, if he's not confident in that ankle, if he's a little quick to get rid of that pass, we see this happen to quarterbacks all the time. They sustain a big injury, and now I'm not going to stand in the pocket this long. I'm going to throw this thing early. I'm going to sail passes. I might throw some interceptions that I wouldn't have thrown before the injury, but now my confidence is broken. Everything I'm doing back there is making me really nervous. If Dak isn't Dak, the Cowboys are going to have some big problems. It's going to be very interesting to see how Dak Prescott responds to that big injury. And that was a gruesome injury. That's not something you just bounce back right away from. I know we're just penciling him in as, oh, he's back, and now that's fixed. Well, let's see. Our final NFC East team is the Philadelphia Eagles, who are just 3 years removed from winning the Super Bowl. But wow, does that feel like forever ago now? Quarterback Carson Wentz is gone and looked terrible before he left. Couldn't even stay on the field because he was so bad. Head coach Doug Peterson kept making weird, bizarre decisions, and they kept losing, even though it looked like they had more talent. So Doug Peterson is gone. The Eagles are basically starting a complete rebuild project. So here's my question for the Philadelphia Eagles. Can they somehow still be competitive in the middle of what is a lot of chaos around this team? Because remember this, for all the nonsense, the replacement at quarterback, the replacement at head coach, the Philadelphia Eagles still have talent on this roster. That offensive line and defensive line, both are very, very talented. So can they somehow steady themselves and say, hey, I realize it's been kind of crazy here, but we have too much talent just to say, well, I guess we're just going to lose. No, no, no. We can still win. And in this division, we can still compete in this division. Can new head coach Nick Sirianni bring this group together? Or is he as goofy as he has seemed so far in his press conferences? Because right now, Philly doesn't need goofy. That's not going to work. They need a steadying presence that's going to come in and say, hey, we're going to get this fixed. We're still going to compete. Oh, I know. We're kind of rebuilding. We have some young players. Jalen Hurts is just a baby. We've got some young, young kids at wide receiver, at running back, but that's all right. We're still going to compete. We're still going to work hard every day. We're going to calm things down and start to win ball games. Or are they just going to be a complete disaster? It's going to be fun to watch if Philly can manage to be competitive. We stay in the state of Pennsylvania, and our whirlwind tour goes next to the AFC North, where the Pittsburgh Steelers won the division last year, which, when I say that, seems weird. When you look at how Pittsburgh's season ends, it didn't really seem like they won the division, but they did. And then they promptly got blown out of the playoffs by their arch rival, the Cleveland Browns, and they allowed almost 50 points in that playoff game. So, what should we expect from the Steelers in 2021? Well, I've got one question for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Does quarterback Ben Roethlisberger have anything left? Because at times last year, he looked like he was done. He looked like he didn't want to play anymore. When that game ended against the Browns, every single thing about Ben Roethlisberger reeked of, this is it. I am done. I am finished. This is the end of an era, and I'm moving on to other things. And then a couple weeks pass, and then he's not really sure what else to do. And he's like, well, am I going to retire? I guess not. The Steelers kind of want me back. And I guess I'll just come back. Well, does he really want to be back? Does he really have anything left? Don't get me wrong. Ben can still make throws. He can still throw touchdowns. But does he really want to compete at the highest of levels? Because that's not what it looked like at the end of last year. And keep this in mind. The Steelers did not address that position at all this offseason. So once again, all of those eggs are in the Ben Roethlisberger basket. If he is not up to the challenge, Pittsburgh's going to be in trouble. So they better hope he's ready to come back and compete like he always has been. But it started to look last year like maybe he was done competing at that level. We'll see what he has left. Next up in the AFC North, the Baltimore Ravens went 11-5. They won a playoff game. They made it to the divisional round, but once again, they came up short. They lost to the Buffalo Bills. And more importantly, once again, quarterback Lamar Jackson struggled in that loss. The Bills kept Lamar Jackson in the pocket, and they said, you're not going to beat us with your legs. You're going to have to sit back there, and you're going to have to throw passes down the field, outside the numbers. And if you can beat us with that, go ahead and do it. But we don't think you can. And he couldn't. So here is my question for the Baltimore Ravens. I don't put this all on Lamar Jackson. Did the Baltimore Ravens give him enough help this offseason? They tried to in the draft. They did go get a big wide receiver for him. But will that be enough? I can't put it all on Lamar. He's got to have some people he can throw to. He's got to have some security blankets that he can go to in the crunch and say, hey, here is my guy. Get him the ball and let him do something with it. He doesn't have a whole lot of talented guys around him. The Baltimore Ravens tried to address that issue. We're going to find out if they did enough. Next up are the Cleveland Browns, who went 11-5 last season. They beat those Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoff game, and then they bowed out to the Kansas City Chiefs in the divisional round in a game that was much closer, I think, than anyone expected. And maybe even more close than anyone even remembers now. But here's the thing. The Cleveland Browns are pretty good on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They need to get a little bit better defensively, for sure. And they're looking to take that next step. They're looking to be a true contender. But here's my question for the Cleveland Browns. Do we really trust this team? Quarterback Baker Mayfield played really well last season. So is that who he is? Or is he the goofy guy that, you know, was kind of inconsistent and threw a lot of interceptions and made a lot of silly plays the year before? Was he that guy or was he this guy? It's kind of hard to tell. I mean, if he can take care of the football, they have a really potent running game. That's going to help this defense that needs to improve. And maybe they could give him more help. But can we really trust this team? Who knows what they're going to do with Odell Beckham Jr.? Who knows if Baker Mayfield is going to step up and be that guy that you can count on week in, week out. Sometimes he looks like that guy. Sometimes he doesn't. And it's hard to trust the Cleveland Browns just yet. They need to do it for another year before we can say, hey, that's just who they are. We'll see what Cleveland does this year. Our final team in the AFC North is, of course, the Cincinnati Bengals, who went 4-11-1 in 2020. But they did start to compete a little behind rookie quarterback Joe Burrow. I mean, this is kind of crazy to think about, but 5 of those 11 losses were by less than a touchdown. And then they had the tie. So you could have been looking at a 9 or 10 win season if everything broke just right. We know that's not usually how it goes. But here's my question for the Cincinnati Bengals. Can they keep Joe Burrow on the field? He was hit often last year. He finally went out with that blown knee in week 11. But here's my bigger concern for Cincinnati. They didn't do much to address that offensive line this offseason. Instead, they chose to go with wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase with their first round pick in the draft. So we're going to have to watch Burrow do a lot of chucking and ducking, because the offensive line is still going to give up hits and sacks, and they had better hope that Joe Burrow stays healthy, because if he can't, Cincinnati is going to go down a very, very bad path again of, well, I guess we don't have our quarterback again. You had better keep Joe Burrow on the field this year. Going to find out if they can do that. We go next to the NFC North and the Green Bay Packers, who won the division last year. They went 13-3. They went all the way to the NFC Championship game. Yes, they lost to the eventual Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but I mean, everything must be good in Green Bay, right? Yeah, not really at all. Quarterback Aaron Rodgers is upset that year after year after year, Packers management won't give him any offensive help. And Aaron Rodgers is telling people he is done in Green Bay. He will never play for that team again. Well, that's going to be interesting, because here's the obvious question. Is he truly done in Green Bay? Because if so, as great as the Packers looked last year, going 13-3, going to the championship game, they were in that championship game to the end. And looking back, they played Tampa Bay, the eventual champion, closer than anyone else did. But if Aaron Rodgers is done in Green Bay, Green Bay Packers are done for a while. Because backup quarterback, first-year quarterback, never gotten the games quarterback, Jordan Love, he is nowhere near ready to start. He is not this polished passer that was coming out like Aaron Rodgers was and just saying, hey, just give me my chance. I'm going to step in and be the man. Oh, no. Jordan Love is a guy that needs a lot of work. And from what I understand, last year, he was not impressing the Packers coaching staff. If Aaron Rodgers is done in Green Bay could be in for a major shakeup in the next few years. Next up are the Chicago Bears, who after going 8-8, they actually somehow made the playoffs last year. Does that sound weird to you, or is it just me? The Bears then went and signed quarterback Andy Dalton, and then they drafted Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields. Well, the Bears are hoping they can get back to the playoffs and maybe even make some noise, maybe even win a game or two. But here's my question for the Chicago Bears. Is head coach Matt Nagy just trying to keep his job this year? It's going to be very interesting to watch, because he is on a very hot seat. The Bears want to win. They want to win now. If Matt Nagy is coaching for his life, he will keep Fields on the bench. He will go with the veteran Dalton with the idea of, okay, give me more time. We'll win a few games. And I always have the kid on the bench in my pocket. I know we're not winning quite as much as we want to, but just wait till I start playing Justin Fields. Then he can extend his job. If not, he's going to go with the rookie. He'll go with Justin Fields, but he's going to lose a lot of games in the process. And I'm not sure I see that happening. He wants to keep his job. You go with Fields, you give the fans what they want. They're all excited, but make no mistake, you're going to lose games. You'll win more games this year with Andy Dalton. Maybe in the future that changes. But this year, Andy Dalton is your better quarterback. But are you going to stick with Andy Dalton and say, I've got to win games now. I've got to keep my job. I've got to keep the pressure off myself. We're going to see what Matt Nagy's biggest focal point is this season. The Minnesota Vikings went 7-9 last year. They missed the playoffs yet again. And the Vikings are in a bit of a transition, because their once solid defense is aging, and it's aging fast. Their quarterback is a salary cap nightmare, and they rely so much on star running back Dalvin Cook. And while it is tempting for for me to wonder if he can stay healthy this year. I actually have a different question for the Minnesota Vikings. When are we going to see that brewing quarterback controversy between Kirk Cousins and Kellen Mond begin? Because the Vikings used the third round pick on the quarterback out of Texas A&M. We know how streaky Kirk Cousins is. If he has a bad stretch where the Vikings can't generate points, the hometown faithful are going to be screaming to see Kellen Mond. And if that happens, it's going to get real interesting up in Minnesota. We finished the NFC North with the Detroit Lions, who are quietly piecing together a pretty good roster. The Lions ignored some of the sexier positions in the draft, and instead, they have chosen to beef up their offensive and defensive lines, which you know I love. They are actually starting to get really good on the offensive line. But here's the question for the Lions. Can they build off of those improvements? Because the skill positions for the Lions, they're not as good. The Lions traded longtime quarterback Matt Stafford for Jared Goff. They don't have a whole lot for Goff to throw to, and I'm not sure how Jared Goff really is. So can the Lions build off of what they've started with those offensive and defensive lines and find a way to win a few games this year and keep that project building? Okay, coming back, we still have half of the league to go. We have questions for the AFC and the NFC South teams. And of course, we still need to get out west for both conferences as well. We still have a lot to get to today on the Daily Dose. We continue our barnstorming tour of the NFL today, and we continue in the AFC South, where the Tennessee Titans won the division last year with an 11-5 record. Here is my question for the Tennessee Titans. Is head coach Mike Vrabel a really bad defensive coach? Because remember, when he was down with the Houston Texans, they progressively got worse defensively under him. Now, we are watching the Tennessee Titans following that exact same path. If the Titans continue to get worse, we're going to be asking a lot from that Titans offense. I love running back Derrick Henry. I mean, dude is just a sledgehammer. He can smash through everything. But how many more seasons can you play at that level? We've seen players like Derrick Henry. We watched guys like Earl Campbell break down pretty fast because you can only take so many hits. Henry can't play at that level forever. Mike Vrabel needs to improve this Titans defense. And the problem is, we have seen wherever he goes, their defense just consistently gets worse. Can he figure out his defense? Because the Titans need him to, and they need him to do it really, really soon. The Indianapolis Colts are next in the AFC South. And after an 11-5 season and a quick visit to the NFL playoffs, quarterback Philip Rivers has now retired to raise his litter of children. Here's one thing to keep in mind. The Indianapolis Colts have a really good football team. They were built well on both the offensive and defensive line. Yeah, they need a little help at skill position, but the biggest thing the Colts need, they really need a bona fide quarterback. So this offseason, the Colts went out and they traded for former Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz. So I have to ask the obvious question, don't I? Can Indianapolis Colts head coach Frank Reich bring Carson Wentz back to being a true bona fide NFL quarterback? Because here's the thing. Carson Wentz looked absolutely broken last year in Philadelphia. But we do know his best years were when Reich was his offensive coordinator in Philly. If Reich can restore Carson Wentz, look out. The Colts are going to be a load because this team does have talent. They just need a quarterback. If not, they're going to be still looking for their quarterback. We'll see how the marriage goes between Reich and Wentz. The Houston Texans went just 4-12 last year, and we now probably have to give the Texans the title of worst sports franchise, probably in all of professional sports. Remember, J.J. Watt is now gone. Starting quarterback Deshaun Watson wanted to leave too. Unfortunately, then we started to get all of the lawsuits by massage therapists, which came flying at him for, they say, inappropriate actions when he was getting massages. So again, I have to ask the obvious question, will Deshaun play football this year? Will he even suit up this year? Will he even get on the field this year? Because this situation could get much, much uglier if this ends up in court, which it looks like it's heading toward. And I mean, it's already ugly now. But if you start getting into court and you start having people testify and we start hearing the horrible details that are going to come out, oh, this is going to get much, much worse. The Texans are a complete and utter disaster. I say this genuinely. If you are a Houston Texans fan, I'm sorry, because this is not going to get better anytime soon. As bad, though, as the Houston Texans were this past year, at least for last year, they were not the worst team in the AFC South. I bet that changes this year. But we are going to finish off the AFC South with the worst team, not just in that division, but in the entire league in 2020. Because the Jacksonville Jaguars went 1-15, and in doing so, they got the right to draft hopeful superstar Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence. That wasn't it. They also went out and signed new head coach Urban Meyer, who has a history of winning often at the collegiate level. The Jags have a lot of things to feel excited about right now, for sure. But here's my question for Jacksonville. Will NFL players buy into Urban Meyer? Remember, he was a college guy. He's not an NFL guy. Will those same methods that he used in college translate to the NFL? Some guys can do it. We've seen successes. We've seen Pete Carroll go to Seattle and be successful. We've also seen Steve Spurrier go to Washington and be terrible. What will Urban Meyer do if things start poorly? Maybe more importantly, what will his team do if things start poorly? Do they abandon ship and say, hey, this is a college guy, he doesn't get it? Remember, Urban is not used to losing. Dude has won like 80% of his games. If things start off slow in Jacksonville, it's going to be fascinating to watch how that team and how he specifically responds to a slow start. We move over to the NFC South, where the New Orleans Saints won this last year with a 12-4 record. But then you also have to remember that Hall of Fame quarterback Drew Brees has now officially retired. So here's my question for the Saints. What do the post-Drew Brees Saints look like? Because not only is Brees gone, the Saints are in such a mess salary cap-wise that they've had to get rid of a lot of depth in recent years. I know we're kind of just used to the Saints being a contender. They're at least going to be in the hunt for a playoff spot every year. I won't be surprised if, with probably Jameis Winston at quarterback, a lot of depth lost off the team, a lot of guys gone from the team, it won't surprise me if this is like a redshirt year for this franchise. I could easily see the New Orleans Saints take a significant step backward in 2020. They just have a lot of holes to fill, and it's going to be tough to do it. They didn't win the division, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers made the playoffs last year as a wild card team. And then, of course, we know they went all the way to a Super Bowl championship. Then, despite the fact that they had numerous free agents, as he usually does, quarterback Tom Brady took way less money to make sure they could re-sign almost all of those free agents, and they have. The Buccaneers are once again the favorites to win it all this next year. But here's the question I do have for Tampa Bay. Can they just pick up right where they left off? Does everyone still have the same hunger? Is everyone going to be driven like they were last year? Especially on the defensive side of the ball. Because remember, by the end of last season, in the playoffs, in the Super Bowl, remember how good they were playing defensively? They gave Patrick Mahomes fits in the Super Bowl. But can they just restart that again? New year, here we go again. We're just going to do it all over again. It doesn't always work that way. It's really, really tough to repeat. I know they look like the odds on favorite on paper, and Tom Brady makes them even more of a favorite, but it's not always easy to find that same fire every single game. The Carolina Panthers went 5-11 last year under quarterback Teddy Bridgewater. And, you know, a lot went wrong for the Panthers last year. Superstar running back Christian McCaffrey, he missed 13 games with multiple injuries. So this offseason, the Carolina Panthers went out and they wanted to improve that offense. They made a trade for former New York Jets quarterback Sam Darnold. They also signed a few other players in free agency. They drafted South Carolina cornerback J.C. Horn. They are hoping that they can get back into playoff contention this season. Here's my question for Carolina. Is Sam Darnold truly the guy? Because that Panthers offensive line is getting better. You have weapons like Christian McCaffrey, David Moore, Robbie Anderson. There's some talent there. But also remember, Darnold has always been pretty mediocre. In three seasons, he has thrown 45 touchdowns. That sounds pretty good. He's also thrown 39 interceptions. He is just 13-25 as a starter. Is he just going to be plugged into Carolina and all of a sudden he's better? Well, I doubt it. But we're going to see, is Sam Darnold truly going to be the guy in Carolina? Our final NFC South team is the Atlanta Falcons, who seem like they just consistently underperform every single year. The Falcons went 4-12 last year, including a few games that, honestly, they had to like try to lose. They had the game won, and they still found ways to lose. Quarterback Matt Ryan, well, he did what he usually does. He threw for over 4,500 yards. He threw for 26 touchdowns. He was also sacked 41 times. And as usual, the Falcons' defense was not very good, especially in crunch time. They allowed 26 points a game, and they were really bad in late game situations. So, going into 2020, here's the question I have for Atlanta. Can they pull together for one last run with this group? Or are they going to begin to splinter and lose games, and you're going to see guys like Julio Jones leave and Matt Ryan leave, or at least check out and not play as well? It sounds kind of strange, but the Falcons could show improvement this year if you just beat out Carolina and New Orleans, who might take a step back. Can Atlanta put some things together and win a few games this year? It's going to be interesting to see if they can hold that together. We reach the AFC West and the Kansas City Chiefs, who went 14-2 last year. They went to the Super Bowl and then they got pounded by Tampa once they got there. Of course, the Chiefs have all-pro quarterback Patrick Mahomes. But as we saw last year in the Super Bowl, they also have some issues on the offensive line. And that is my question for the Chiefs. Are those problems on the offensive line fixed? Because last year, the Chiefs had numerous injuries on the offensive front. So instead of just saying, okay, let's get these guys healthy and let's try it again, they got rid of some offensive linemen. They went and they signed Joe Tooney and Orlando Brown Jr. and said, we're just going to plug in these new guys and we're going to be better. Well, can these new players now step in and get this line back to where it was being a strength? Because keep this in mind, that Chiefs window of contending for a Super Bowl every year, it is going to start closing. Patrick Mahomes' gigantic contract is going to kick in hard next season. That's going to limit the Chiefs' ability to just sign every single player that they want to. They need to win this year, and they better have solved their offensive line problems, or Patrick Mahomes is going to be under constant duress. Next up are the Las Vegas Raiders, who started strong last year. They had a 6-3 record. And then they went 2-5 down the stretch, and they finished 8-8. The defense specifically was terrible. They gave up 30 points per game. But one of the strengths of the Raiders was their offensive line. They helped the running game with running back Josh Jacobs, and they kept quarterback Derek Carr from getting killed on every single play. But the Raiders got rid of a lot of that offensive line. They have now lost 3-time Pro Bowl center Rodney Hudson. He went down to Arizona. They lost right guard Gabe Jackson. He went to Seattle. They lost right tackle Trent Brown. He went to the New England Patriots. So will the Raiders' once strong offensive line now join their defense as also being a liability? Because if so, this team could be in trouble. We know Derek Carr gets jumpy in the pocket even with a good offensive line. What's he going to look like if this group doesn't come together and improve? It might get rough for the Raiders if their offensive line can't keep that same standard of being good this next year. Next up, the Los Angeles Chargers finished 7-9 in 2020, and they have a lot to feel good about. They may have found their franchise quarterback in Justin Herbert, who threw for 31 touchdowns as a rookie. There's a lot of talent on offense around Justin Herbert, so you would think Herbert would continue to improve. I mean, defensive coordinators will come out. They'll take some things away from Herbert, and he'll have to adjust. He'll have to get better. He could take a little bit of a step back, but I think Herbert's going to be fine. That's not my question for the Chargers. Here's the question I have for the Chargers. Can fourth-year safety Derwin James return to form? Because remember, in his rookie season, Derwin James looked special. He was dominant. This kid looked like, man, if he plays like this every year, he's not just going to be an all-pro. This kid's going to be like a Hall of Famer. And then he broke his foot in his second season. He missed 11 games. Then he blew his knee last year and missed the entire season. So can Derwin James return from what is basically a 2-year absence? If so, he's going to help that Chargers defense significantly. But coming back from a 2-year injury, that will not be easy. We're going to have to keep an eye on Derwin James and see if he can bounce back. The Denver Broncos finished dead last in the AFC West with a 5-11 record, and I hate to pin it all on one person. I swear I do. But starting quarterback Drew Lock had 19 turnovers last year between his interceptions and his fumbles. That's really hard to overcome. The Broncos did also have a ton of injuries, and their lack of depth really showed. So, going into 2021, here is the question I have for the Denver Broncos. Who is going to be the starting quarterback? I mean, is it going to be Drew Lock again? Will he improve and benefit from having a real offseason and a real preseason this year? He didn't get that last year. Or could it be newly acquired quarterback Teddy Bridgewater, who the Broncos traded for? I mean, Teddy won't be spectacular, but I guarantee he would cut down on all those turnovers. Or is it possible that the Denver Broncos could somehow make a deal with the Green Bay Packers for quarterback Aaron Rodgers, and then he comes here, and he wins a few Super Bowls, and he walks off into the sunset like a couple of other Bronco quarterbacks have done in the past? And you know, as long as we're dreaming, I'd also like a unicorn. Our final division in our barnstorming tour of questions that we have for all 32 NFL teams is the NFC West, where the Seattle Seahawks finished on top of this division last year with a 12-4 record, but then they actually lost to division rival the Los Angeles Rams in their wild card game. Here is the question I have for the Seahawks going into this next year. Do quarterback Russell Wilson's teammates hate him? Because remember, he went on a sports show like a month or so ago, and he said how he doesn't have any help. He needs way more help. The Seahawks are kind of ripping him off by not giving him more people. He even talked about wanting out of Seattle because they haven't given him more support and more help. Well, you know those players that you're saying aren't giving you help? You know how those players you're saying are terrible? They have to play with you. And say you're an offensive lineman for Seattle and you've been called out for, you know, sucking. How motivated would you be to block for Russ? Yeah, same here. Probably not that motivated. The Seahawks and Russell Wilson will be very interesting to watch in 2021 because I want to see if his teammates truly have his back. There are already rumors that his teammates don't like him as it is. I can't imagine any of that stuff helped. The Los Angeles Rams are up next. They went 10-6 last year, but they did beat Seattle in that playoff game. And then this offseason, the Rams went and made a big trade to bring in quarterback Matt Stafford from Detroit in exchange for Jared Goff. Hey, make no mistake, this Rams team, with their defense, and now their offense, and Matt Stafford, and some of the talent they have, they are Super Bowl or bust. But I do have one question for the Rams. Is Matt Stafford just plug in and fix all the ills of the Rams offense? I know he was stuck in Detroit. I know Detroit doesn't always have the most talent around him, but he is 74-90-1. As a starter. That's a lot of games you've played, and you've always kind of looked the same. So is a career losing quarterback going to suddenly be the guy that gets the Rams able to overtake Tampa Bay and make the Rams champions? That's going to be fun to watch. Maybe it was all just Detroit. Maybe Detroit was just pulling him down and he just couldn't win because they just have so many problems with the Lions. Or maybe Matt Stafford is who he is and that giant sample size is accurate and that's what Matt Stafford's going to be with the Rams. He's just going to be another guy. We'll see if he can prove that it was just the Lions. He's actually a winner. The Arizona Cardinals were the surprise of the first half of the season last year. You might not remember it now, but the Cardinals started fast. They were 5-2. They were looking at the midway point like a legitimate playoff contender. And then they finished the season losing 6 of their last 9 games. They finished just 8-8 and they didn't make it. Head coach Cliff Kingsbury, they are saying, needs a good season this year or he could find himself on a hot seat. Hey, this group needs to be a playoff contender at the very least. Here is my question for the Arizona Cardinals, and it might sound a little bit crazy, but hear me out. Is the Cardinals offense too little? I mean, quarterback Kyler Murray is 5'10", and I think like 8 inches of that is just that giant helmet he wears.
Oh, your helmet is so big.
He gets a lot of passes batted down at the line of scrimmage, but it's not just him. Running back Chase Edmonds is just 5'9". Wide receiver Christian Kirk is 5'11". Wide receiver Andy Isabella is also just 5'9". You've got a lot of little dudes playing offense for the Arizona Cardinals. Hey, you are playing a big man's sport with some really small guys. We're going to see if Arizona can figure out how to get back to the winning they were doing at the beginning of the season that they couldn't seem to replicate in the second half of the season. We reach team number 32, our final team of the NFC West and the final team of our whirlwind tour of the NFL. And it is, of course, the San Francisco 49ers who went 6-10 last season. But the Niners lost starting quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo for 10 games. And even when he did play, he was pretty terrible. So San Francisco traded quite a bit to move up to the number 3 pick in the NFL draft, where they selected North Dakota State quarterback Trey Lance. So now, I think the question for the Niners has to be, are the San Francisco 49ers a true contender with Jimmy Garoppolo? I know they just went to the Super Bowl with him 2 years ago, so you can say, of course they are. But since then, Garoppolo is 3-3 as a starter, and he has struggled to make the throws needed to run Kyle Shanahan's offense. I think Shanahan is highly frustrated with Garoppolo. So how patient will they be? Because if I'm being honest, I don't think Trey Lance is close to being ready to be a starter just yet. He is going to need a lot of polish. This is going to be a massive jump for that kid. From North Dakota State, and not even playing for North Dakota State this last year, not playing at all, but then to jump into the NFC West? Yeah, good luck. We're going to see how patient the Niners are going to be with Jimmy Garoppolo. Because I don't know if Trey Lance is going to be ready, but you just know those Niner fans are going to want to see what that young kid has to offer. Hey, the 2021 NFL season is going to be here before we know it. And you know, as mini camps and training camps begin to open in the next few months, we're going to start to get answers to some of these questions in what should be a very, very interesting year in the NFL. As usual, it is always super exciting in the NFL. Hey, next week on The Dose, we'll of course be keeping you up to date with all that happens in the world of sports. And I know, I realize, we are getting into a long dry spell in the world of sports. All we have left right now is like the NBA and NHL seasons finishing up, and then it's nothing but baseball until football starts again. But never fear, I'm telling you right now, over the next few months, we have a couple of very interesting things planned for you. You are not going to want to miss them. Make sure you keep tuning into The Daily Dose and make sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I have to say thank you so much to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails, the texts, the tweets. Thank you for subscribing to our YouTube channel and giving us positive ratings wherever it is you watch or listen. But more than anything else, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to GSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Oh, your helmet is so big.